Welcome back to Magnetic North, where flannel sheets are ready for use on both my bed and the tomato plants. For despite the record-breaking heat of late, 97 degrees at the State Fair on August 25th, we are not fooled. It's folly not to plan for frost in the waning days of August, even if it is 90 degrees in the shade at the farm. Truth be told, a fierce winter is in our future. The predictions for it are piling up like zucchini in the fridge. And I'm not just talking Farmer's Almanac here. Heck no. Yesterday I found a nearly solid black woolly bear caterpillar on the chicken coop stoop. Only a few tufts of brown fuzz on the creature. And as we know, the wider the brown band on the woolly bear, the milder the winter. A skinny band means a nasty winter. And no band at all, well, you get the picture. And it's white and windy. But I'm ready. My woodpile is neatly stacked, and I'm in the process of laying in a generous store of books, stacking them like logs on the hearth, on top of the chest freezer, and virtually on any other available space, including the bathroom and backseat of my car. They say that burning wood warms you twice, once while splitting and stacking it, and next while basking in its cozy heat. Well, laying in the winter reading does much the same thing, only different. In culling our lifetime collection of good reads, I've sweated biscuits, and not just because of the temperature outside. Letting go of half my wildflower guides and cookbooks was agony. Each seemed to call out to be kept, and the ones I'd hardly looked at fairly shrieked, "Philistine, you'll be sorry you gave me up." But Paul always said that when you haven't touched a thing for 3 whole years, it's time to give it up. Of course, that only applied to my things, not his. Thus, the ice fishing spear and tackle boxes filled with ancient gewgaws and gimcracks, untouched for a quarter century, remain in the hunt room. When I would remind him of that, he would counter with, "Some things are just nice to have," or, "I'm saving those for the grandkids." Beyond a few things, though, Paul was no hoarder. But I felt like one by hanging on to many of our books. Only a few were bad choices to begin with. Sewing for house chickens comes to mind instantly. So the ones I intend parting with are not only valuable, but are not embarrassing to put up for sale. The historical books written by David McCullough and Bill Moyers on theology, for example, brilliant and compelling reads, yet I doubt that I'll want to dive back into them as I do with any of the many C.S. Lewis books I've stacked to reread this winter. Then there are my cookbooks. Sadly, I have succumbed to the lazy cook's resource Google when wondering what to do with my bounty of fresh veggies. Sentiment alone counts in choosing the keepers. And so, while I keep my duct tape Betty Crocker's Ode to Jell-O and canned condensed soup, dear old Chop Until You Drop Dean Ornish will go. I can find potfuls of healthy recipes online, but the soup-stained pages of Betty's books abound with memories. So too the Norwegian Christmas recipe booklet, from which I made Paul's favorite risengrøt, rice porridge. A simple dish that requires only several hours of stirring off and on to produce a fragrant concoction to spoon into bowls, sprinkle generously with sugar and cinnamon, then top with a pat of butter and a dash of heavy cream. Norwegian custom had it that whosoever got an almond in their bowl would have their wish granted. Being British and not given to chance, I made sure that both Paul and I had an almond with each and every bowl. And my wish was always for the caloric content of the dish to be cut in half. My current favorite cookbook is the Pie Place Cookbook, and no, not just because Paul and I are in it. I'm working my way through making a recipe a week. They are all so good and easy to do. I'll admit that we did spend so many good times at the old and new restaurant that the Pie Place family has a special place in my heart. It was always where Paul wanted to go, unless, of course, he was hankering for a Blue Water strawberry malt and grilled cheese sandwich, which he persistently called girl cheese. His old childhood buddy Soup for Superman, Lunston, called it that, he always reminded me. And by saying that, Paul usually started spinning one of his famous yarns about growing up in Excelsior on the shores of Lake Minnetonka and all of the kids and situations he encountered. Food recipes, stained and torn cookbook pages, all of these conjure up times past, people loved, and places in the heart. Foods that feed memory satisfy more than mere hunger. They fill me with gratitude, make me laugh even, and best of all, they're calorie-free. But back to the coming winter and my woolly bear sighting. So taken aback was I when examining the little bugger that I decided to find out just how accurate predictions based on his fuzz color were. Well, I'm sorry to say they seem to be, if not bang on, pretty darn good. Back in the 1950s, one C.H. Curran, curator of insects at the American Museum of Natural History, tested and confirmed, sort of, that the little larval stage of the Isabella tiger moth has an 80% accuracy in predicting the severity of winter. And so I'm thinking that I'd better put in a call for yet more maple and birch. And beyond that, maybe it would be prudent to add to my stack of books as I cull. Say, cull two, buy one new. I'll stock up on rice, too. Ditto butter and cinnamon and almonds. After all, one can't be too cautious in this part of the world. For, as the very wise young man told my visiting grandson this summer, the wilderness can be harsh, dude. For WTIP, this is Vicki Biggs Anderson with Magnetic North.